This comic is brought live from our clubs and colleges around the U.S. Please give a warm, funny bone welcome for Adrian Cosby.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, I hope these levels are right, because I don't have time to go back and redo them. Welcome, guys. It's Monday morning, and it's totally unrelated. I'm your host, Adrian Cosby. Thank you for joining me. Sorry about last week. Missed a whole episode last week. It was funny, because I was in the middle of recording, and I got really nauseous. I don't know what caused that exactly, but I ended up taking a nap in the middle of the day. I've been off my pain medication for a while, but I think... It tore up my stomach a little bit. And it could have also just been that that was my body's way of rejecting the podcast. I feel like it wasn't up to my typical standards of excellence. Or it might have just been my psychic minds telling me, don't record yet. Nothing's really happened. And I think that's probably more accurate. A lot's happened since we last spoke. I'm drinking my morning coffee because it's still like 9 o'clock here. You're like, most people get more stuff done before 9 a.m. Than I get done all day. I'm pretty sure that was in a commercial. Let's get right to it, guys. Last week was huge for me. It started all last week. I'm going to try to go back as far as I can. I think it started at the Olympia Resort. I took a 9-hour drive. I hadn't been on stage in about 3 weeks. And... definitely not a paid show in 3 weeks. I think the longest set I did one set for about 8 minutes in between there. Then I had emergency back surgery and hadn't been on stage since the surgery. I think I was only supposed to be sitting down in the car for about an hour. The doctor said that's give or take. I mean, I've been active and moving around. But I drove out to Wisconsin, upper Wisconsin and back, without too much trouble. The show was... It was weird. It was, I got a lot of feedback. I sold 2 shirts as I was walking off stage. It was the first time I've ever pitched more than one shirt, but I have a lot of these older versions of shirts that I made that I have in just random sizes, like 9 mediums of one style. And then another style I have every size except for medium, large, and extra large. And then another shirt I just have, a couple double XLs. So I was like, well, I'm going to try and sell these before I sell any of my totally unrelated t-shirts because I want to save those for the podcast fans. And I sold 5 shirts to about 25 people. When you drive 9 hours to perform for 25 people, it doesn't really matter, especially when you haven't been on stage for as long as I had been. But made a lot of friends, ended up selling a total of like 5 or 6 shirts. So I ended up selling like 25 merching something to 25% of the audience. And I had to actually turn a couple people away because I didn't have the size that they wanted in the style that they wanted. And that's a first that anyone's ever just been like, okay, well, I guess I'll just go. Because if you guys have ever been to one of my shows, you know I let the customer set the pricing. I mean, I tell them how much it costs me to make, but it's up to them on how much they want to pay for it. And I've never declined anybody, no matter how small amount of money, because there's some people that... it's just like tipping for black people. You know, some people don't, but those that do make up for the ones that don't. And that's the same way it goes with any type of gratuity, I feel like. It's not just black people. It's everybody. There's a lot of bad people in the world. Good people make up for it. At least for now. Okay, so back to the story. Drive back. I was editing some excerpts from that show. I don't know if I'll air them or not. I kind of let the crowd get away from me for a few seconds. And a few seconds is all it takes for pure anarchy. But I railed it back. Rolled it. Reined it back in. Let's just pick a word and just say it. I reined it back in and finished pretty strong. And I don't know. I mean, the show said in the notes that it was supposed to be clean and don't pick on the audience. But I did both those things. I did not keep it clean. And I went straight into the audience. But one guy did get arrested after the show for something that I think was completely unrelated to the show. He was just drunk. Come back from Olympia Resort on Sunday afternoon. I realized, like, that was rough, but it's time to get back to work. I'm in Columbus now. I email the manager of the Columbus Funny Bone, who I've spoken to recently, but he had said on a number of occasions, do not contact me until you live here, until you've moved in. And I guess that was his way of saying he wasn't going to spring for a hotel or the condo. So I've been here for 2-3 weeks now, but not able to work because of my back surgery. And so I waited till the earliest convenience, which I felt like was after I'd been on stage at least once. I email him Monday morning at 9 a.m. He emails me back usually within 10 to 15 minutes. But I didn't get an email back until Tuesday morning early. And he said, great, you want to open for Mary Lynn Rice Cub tonight? For those of you that don't know, because I didn't, Mary Lynn Rice Cub was on the show 24 for like 6 seasons or however many seasons it was on. Whenever Jack Bauer needed something and he had to call for a hack, he had to call his assistant for a hack, he was calling Mary Lynn Rice Cub's character. And she would type up some stuff, whatever. She's hilarious. She was a comedian first and after. And maybe you never saw the show 24. She's also Gail the Snail on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is one of my all-time favorite shows. You might know her as the cousin that has to be thwarted with by, they throw salt on her. That's why they call her Gail the Snail. They have to throw salt on her to make her go away. And also she's in the commercial that was on Comedy Central for a long time where she says, I'm giving Frank a handy under the table. And he says, you're really just mashing it. And she's hilarious. Truly funny. But she's kind of been my totem recently because her name kept coming up. I love the Fitzsimmons, Greg Fitzsimmons podcast, Fitzdog Radio. If you are like, oh, I like podcasting, I want to listen to a podcast, I'd say my style is somewhere between Bert Kreischer and Greg Fitzsimmons when it comes to podcasting. Sometimes I have a guest, sometimes I do it by myself. But both of those guys, I think, are my left brain and right brain. I think they're friends. I'm not sure if they've done each other's podcasts, but if they have, I've listened to it, so I'm not worried about it. A lot of podcasting I listen to. The show was fantastic. It was the Ohio primary on Tuesday. You know, I accepted the gig, and I went expecting for him to see my set and kind of base my future off of how well my set went. Well, my set didn't go so great, but there was only like, the club holds like 350, 400. There was probably like 75 people there. So it felt a little bit small. Just felt a little bit small. But I didn't see him at all before I went up. And they cut my time by 5 minutes because the crowd was a little bit small. So that kind of screwed me because the set that I had planned for had callbacks in the end. So the chunk that I took out was the part that also had the callbacks in the end. So I felt like I ended up taking out 10 minutes instead of 5. So I riffed a little. It went fine. It was going to be what it was. It was kind of an alt vibe in the room. And also on a Tuesday night, you seldom, for 75 people, you seldom see the roof get torn off. But people have to go to work the next day. They're not. The show went a lot better than I thought, though, because after the show, I took a great selfie. You can see it on Instagram with me, with Mary Lynn Rice Cub and the fans. She wasn't selling anything. She was just signing DVDs and different fan artifacts from the show. And I had left in kind of a hurry because the general manager wasn't there for my set. He came in after, and he was paying me, and I was telling him about the back surgery. And then I went out and finished watching the show, and then I was coming back into the green room to get my bag and my jacket, and I slipped and fell on my back, guys. They were mopping the floor, and it was wet. And I knew they were mopping the floor. I saw it, and so I was walking carefully, but I think the leg that's not working correctly, I think the foot that's not fully responsive, just couldn't adapt to the slight slip, and I went down quick, which was in a way good and in a way bad. The slip was not like the type of fall where somebody pulls the rug out from underneath you and your legs go out from underneath you. That can happen on ice. sometimes. It can happen on a wet floor too, but my fall was much more of us like sliding into home. So I kind of eased into it, and I didn't use my hands at all. I just took it like a man takes it sometimes, or a woman can take it that way. I mean, if it's about a fall that we're talking, that's not a metaphor. I'm talking about falling. And some people don't fall correctly. Some people put their hands out and break both their wrists or their fingers or their arms. And I put my hands like I was on a water slide. And I'm a lifelong soccer player. I've worked in restaurants way too long and been on way too many wet floors to not take full responsibility. But when the general manager came out, the look on his face was priceless. It was like 1,100 forms of fear just layered up inside of him. I hope this guy's not paralyzed. I hope this guy doesn't sue me. I hope this didn't hurt his back. I hope this guy doesn't take my restaurant from me. I mean, literally fear. And he's a nice guy. I know he was genuinely concerned for my health, but if I wasn't okay, it was the type of thing where he wasn't going to be okay. But I was fine. So I emailed him the next morning and told him I was fine. And also that I would be coming in with my best good friend, Jay Snyder, for Thursday morning show. There was a show at noon at the Columbus Funny Bone called Callin' Sick to Work, starring Bert Kreischer. So if you guys don't know who Bert Kreischer is, please Google him right now. Or go directly to his website, BertBertBert.com. It's Bert with an E. He is one of my favorite podcasters, one of my favorite comedians. It's a completely different style of comedy than you've ever seen. If you're a regular club goer, it's very story form, and it's very what I would call audience ingratiating. He builds a kind of a friendly party consensus amongst his fans. One of my favorite podcasters, because it was one of the podcasts that I listened to that made me realize that I could do a podcast, because he'll have on like really famous guests and still manage to talk about himself mostly, and then acknowledge that he's talking about himself. But it's really just an idea. What I see him doing is searching for his life in other people's stories. And I think it's really neat. And I got to meet him a couple months ago in Dayton, and it was one of the most, I don't know what to say. It was one of the most awesome things I've ever experienced in comedy to that point. I've met more famous people than him, but I'm really a fan of his. You know what I mean? And that's what made it so cool. And he was really cool. He's just a really cool dude. So my friend Jay Snyder, as you guys know from Storytime with Jay Snyder, is good friends with Bert. Bert's been friends with Jay for several years, and he talks about Jay on his podcast sometimes and Jay's stories. So he had been telling Jay for a couple of years that he wanted to use Jay as a middle act. He'd take him all over the country with him, but he had to do it the right way. He couldn't just... He was like, you got to get passed through Stroop, who is the gatekeeper, the guy you audition for if you want to middle at any of these 20 funny bones and improvs all across the country. Bert was insistent that Jay do it the right way and not just get taken on the road. I'm doing air quotes, taken on the road, which is what happens sometimes. A famous person can take you on the road, or not even famous, but somebody more famous than you can take you on the road, and that just puts you in their show. There's a lot of reasons why people do that. There's a lot of reasons why people don't do that. Most people don't take anybody on the road with them. It can be a hassle. It's like having a roommate under stressful travel situations. And it's just, you know, if you've ever had a roommate, it doesn't always bring out the best in people, especially under stressful situations. Now, a reason why some people do that is because some people are unusually adapted to the road. Bert's one of those people who is unusually adapted to the road, meaning he can stay out. He's got a family, but he's able to get home, you know, probably every week when he's doing comedy. But he also does a show on Travel Channel, so he probably has to stay out longer for that. Some people can't stand to be away from home, and some people are just adapted to it. I'd say he's well adapted to it. Jay's pretty well adapted to it. So Jay was recently passed. In fact, Jay and I auditioned in November of 2014 for Stroop at the Newport Funny Bone. And there was about 11 comics on the show. I think 10 comics on the show. 9 if you don't count the person who bombed. And it was an interesting event because I was with two of my best friends, two of my closest contemporaries from the city that I'm from, which was Dayton. And there was some Cincinnati comics and a couple Columbus comics, a couple people I'd never seen of or heard of before. But the most of us I knew. I think out of the 10 comics, I knew not seven of them. So Jay was the only one that got passed. But it was also kind of, it was weird. It wasn't apparent and it wasn't rigged because we all drew numbers out of a hat. But Jay went ninth out of 10. And it would, if Jay had gone first, it would have been a much harder show for everybody because Jay was just so much stronger than everybody. But going that late in the show also propelled him into a much stronger position. But he also hit every gear. He did. He talked about himself. He talked about his life. And then he talked to the audience. And that went well. And that can be one of those things where you're really rolling the dice when you do crowd work at an audition. That's not what they're there to see. But he made it really funny. And it's part of his show. He got passed. But in that last year, he's only gotten a couple weeks maybe. Maybe we'll say 2 weekends and 4 one-nighters out of the last year and a half almost since his passing. I did not get passed. He said he liked half my act and didn't like the other half and that he wanted to see it again. And so when I asked him, I was like, is that like in 3 years or is that like in the next audition or what? And he was like, no, I'll see you again quickly within the next couple months. Well, it's been over a year since he's seen me. But a lot has happened in that year. I've gotten better, stronger for sure. And we've also met several times just over the course of me being, I don't even know what you would call it, an employee of the business of comedy. So we have, I sent him this email. I sent Stroop an email on Wednesday morning after the Tuesday slip and fall and tell him that I'll be coming in with Jay. I'm bringing him in to make sure he gets there on time and everything because Jay's the kind of guy that would need a handler when he gets on the road. And that I'm a big fan of Bert. Kind of just greasing the wheel, letting him know I'm going to be hanging out in your club because I'm not that cool. It's not like my home club. In Dayton or Toledo, I would just go. I wouldn't have to tell them that I was coming or that I was going to be hanging out with the comic. I would just go because it's like those are like my home clubs. Same at Wiley's. I don't have to let them know that I'm coming and that I'm going to be hanging out. But I felt like it was a courtesy, you know. And he could still have been like, screw you, you're not hanging out. Go sit in the bar area. So I go pick up Jay. Jay's running late. We still get to the club about an hour early, and we're feeling good. We're just like, it's St. Patrick's Day. It's the call in sick to work. I'd already heard Bert on the radio that morning in Columbus. He said, if you're the owner of a small company, this is me doing a Bert impression. If you're the owner of a small company, if you're the CEO, get your staff together in the staff room and let them know that you're calling in sick and you're coming to my show, and I'll comp your tickets. So I got to listen in on a conference call with a small company, had like 9 members, and some of them had already started to hear about it because they were listening to the radio at work. This show always sells out. He does it all across the country. It's called Call in Sick to Work. He goes on the radio at 8 o'clock in the morning and starts drinking and then tells everybody to buy tickets to whatever club he's going to be at. And then he does his show at noon. And the theme is you call in sick to work and go to a comedy show. It always sells out. And radio is one of the hardest ways to translate into ticket sales. TV and radio, like if you see a comic on TV and radio promoting the show that weekend, it does very little to generate ticket sales directly. It's almost always word of mouth. Somebody might see that and tell somebody else, and then that somebody else goes and buys a ticket. But it's almost never a direct, like I heard you on the radio, so I came in. But Bert is that magnetic that even if you're not already a fan, you're coming to see what this guy's all about because he is truly a good storyteller and just a fun guy to be around. So we get to the club at 11. The show starts at noon. We go right back into the green room and run into Dave Stroop right on the way, eating a green donut with the staff. They had crispy, everything was there. I mean, it was fully decked out with St. Patrick's Day food and Jameson shots out of foam shamrocks. It was just like shot girls in a club, but it was craziness. We get back in the green room. We're there for about 10 minutes, and Stroop gives us both the Rock on the Range here in Columbus. He's like, you guys available for Rock on the Range? And so we book a date just from hanging out at a rock show. Jay did it last year. He said it was awesome. And so we get to do that again this year. And we're like high-fiving. Like, let's do a shot. That is awesome. Bert's not even here yet, and we're already having an amazing day. And then about 20 minutes before the show's supposed to start, Jay finally asks, Dave, he's like, how much time do you want me to do? And Dave looks at me and is like, I don't know, Adrian, do you want to host? And I'm like, trying to be as humble about it as I possibly can as I'm like diarrheaing into my own pants. I'm like, well, I can do the announcements or whatever you need me to do, man. I can do whatever. And he's like, no, we don't even need announcements. Just like do like 10 or 15 minutes. Have fun up there. Okay. I'm not dressed to perform, but I learned from Sam Malone on Cheers that you should always have a packed bag in your car. And I did. And so I went out in the car and changed into appropriate attire and came back in. And now we're super high-fiving because we're both on this amazing show. And it's completely full. The room is completely full. I'll post pictures and play a little clip. And I had a great set. I don't like it when other comics talk about themselves as having had a good set, or they post on Facebook, I just ripped it. I just tore the roof off this motherfucker. I mean, that's putting your vanity before reality. Because if you really did do a good job, then other people would be the ones saying that about you. And maybe they are somewhere, but it's like, I don't want to hear how good of a mom you are. That's something somebody else is supposed to say about you. But I'm telling you guys, A to B, I had a good set. They were a hot crowd. I mean, I'll play a clip. You'll hear. It was like T-ball. I was good, but they were great, you know. And then I brought up our friend Mark Gregory, who ripped it, did the best Bernie Sanders joke you're going to hear until Bernie Sanders isn't relevant anymore. And then I get to bring up, I'll play the clip. And amazing, just an amazing treat, right, to be a part of that. And I go back, me and Jay go back towards the green room, and Stroop says, let me give you guys some dates. And so we both start walking into his office. We're like mentally high-fiving each other. Now on Tuesday, when I told Jay that I was going to be doing the Tuesday night show, he said to me, he said, you know, if he watches your set and he likes it, he's been known to, air quote, open up the books, end air quote. I'm doing air quotes over open up the books, which is like a mafia term for getting made, air quotes. If you know anything about Goodfellas, the Joe Pesci character, gets made, gets to be a made man, and then he gets killed literally like a couple hours later. And being made just means that nobody can touch you. Being made in the mafia means that nobody can touch you without permission, and you are, you know, you're of rank. Being made at this level for me, and that is just an analogy for getting past. Once you've been passed, it means you can work in this chain, which is Funny Bones Improv all over the country. I think there's 16 clubs. Plus, he books a lot of corporate stuff that's not in a club. And I mean, it's amazing access. To be passed through this, through Stroop, is probably one of the biggest gatekeepers in the business. In fact, let's put it this way. It's the only one that I haven't passed through that I know about that was causing me some level of depression for having not gotten through it yet. So him saying, let me give you some dates was basically some sort of validation that I am a comic. So we're walking back to his office, and Jay's like, he's only done this for two people that I know, which is basically give you dates right after he saw your set. And Jay had just told me that Bert and Stroop watched my set and could tell that they were both enjoying it. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but we're walking back into the office together, and he's like, you guys are coming in together? And we're like, well, why wouldn't we? And he's like, well, you're not going to start fighting over dates, are you? And I was like, us fight? Me and Jay? Me and my best good friend? We're like Forrest and Bubba. We don't fight. And we didn't. We sat there, and because one of the first things Dave said to us when we got there that day was that how much Bert liked Jay, and that Bert wanted to take Jay all over the country with him. He's like, Bert really loves you, man. He wants to take you everywhere. And Jay said, yeah. He told me I had to do it the right way, though. He told me I had to get passed through you before he would take me because he didn't want it to be one of those situations where I was the guy getting taken on the road, air quotes, right? And Jay was, it got kind of silent for a second, and Jay was like, you son of a bitch, just take me on the road. But everybody laughed, and we're walking back into the office. And so I know they're friends, and I know that that's their thing. So every time it was a Bert date, it's a Bert date, I just deferred to Jay. I didn't even speak up. I did get one date with Bert Kreischer in like 2 weeks in Virginia Beach, but that's only because Jay had just been there with somebody else. He was just there, so like couldn't, you know, you got to give it some time. You can't take your act to the same club more than once a year usually. Unless it's an off night, but if you're there for a full week, usually you're only there for a full week once a year. But there are some exceptions to that rule. The long story short, we both got booked in all of the clubs in one sitting. And it was the most glorious event because it was the most bookings I'd ever landed in a 30-minute period. And I can easily say, like, over the course of 4 days, it's the most bookings because I've been getting different bookings from different people. It was almost like psychically the ball just got rolling. It was like I was walking around with a lightning rod and finally the storm clouds started to form. But while we were hanging out that day, right after that, we are partying. Bert doesn't just like drink during the show. He doesn't even really drink during the show. If you notice, he takes beers and stuff, but he's just so talkative that he doesn't get a chance to drink them. So he does shots and drinks after the show with the fans. He's hanging out, selling his book. So Jay's like running the credit card machine. Bert's handling the cash, and I'm handling cameras if people want to take a picture. But we're taking pictures together. It was fantastic. It was fantastic. We got paid. We weren't expecting to get paid for that show. I mean, to us, that was more of like a privilege to be able to do that show than it was work. And fantastic, just fantastic. And we hung out with Bert after the show in the green room. We went out to eat with Bert and some friends after the show. We met great friends. Shout out to Jason from Columbus. Shout out to Death Squad. Shout out to all of the people that came out to support Bert and laugh and called in sick to work on St. Patrick's Day. That was an amazing, amazing show, an amazing night, an amazing day. We're hanging out with Bert, and I get an emergency text from another booking agency asking me to be in Wisconsin a day early. So I was already supposed to be in Wisconsin Wausau, Wisconsin. I was supposed to be in Wausau on Saturday for a one-nighter, but it paid a little bit more than normal, so it was like okay for a one-nighter, but who wants to drive that far for one show? I was a little bit, if I didn't need it, I wouldn't have done it, but it was like one of those situations where I was like, this is all you've got this month is one-nighters, so you're taking it. And you can also make a lot of money selling merch. And the irony of it is that I got this extra Wisconsin gig the day before. And so I was in La Crosse, which is a little bit further out, but only 2 hours from Wausau. So I got to work with my good friend Katrina Brown on Friday night, where I sold plenty of t-shirts. Spread the word about Totally Unrelated, sold plenty of t-shirts, and then went to Wausau the next night where I sold just a handful of t-shirts, which was okay because I had a great show both nights. Both nights I had sets where I felt almost like magic was coming out of my fingertips, like I could do no wrong. I remember I was working with this comedian. His name's Bodacious. You can find him on Instagram and Twitter as Bo last name. Funny guy. Funny. He's probably headlining a Funny Bone right now. I think he's out of Virginia Beach. He said that he was at a point in his career, because this was a couple of years ago, he's like, I'm just getting to that point where I feel like I can do whatever I want when I'm up there. Like, I can take it as far as I want. I can make it as funny as I want when I'm up there. He's like, I just remember before trying to survive it, and now I'm, like, trying to push the limit. And that's how I felt this weekend. I think the confidence of landing all those bookings and just feeling good about myself went a long way to just feeling like I was going to be like, I'm just going to have a great show no matter what happens here. And both times was true. I had great sets. And then the headliners went up and destroyed, almost to the point where it made me forget about how good I did. But any good headliner or any good comedian or any comedian that knows that sometimes a headliner is totally carrying a show. And sometimes a headliner gets the show to where it is because it was built there. The headliner's kind of like the main porn star in a porno. There's other porn people there doing work, but you really only see the main guy. And so when everybody else is doing their job right, he probably looks amazing. The girl probably, the star looks amazing. Everybody looks amazing. And that's sort of what is happening in comedy, whether it's a male or a female star, is sort of the MC or the opening acts are just fluffers to make you really appreciate the final product. And so maybe you're seeing a little bit more of the behind the scenes, but it's supposed to be the middle guy. The first guy's just the ringmaster. The second guy is pretty funny. And then the last guy is the person that you came to see, the headliner. So it's MC, feature, headliner. Some people don't like that terminology because feature sounds like feature presentation, which would be what you came to see, but it's not in this business, at least. So you could call it first, second, and third, opener, middle, and last, or opener, middler, headliner is what I think veterans say typically. In any case, I middled for two headliners who crushed it behind me and gave me a lot of credit for doing well in front and making their jobs easy. Because some comics would consider doing well in front making your job harder, but it's only harder if you let it be. If you're like nervous or you don't like it when other people are equally as funny, but or you're just not as confident. But I've never seen a truly talented, like my friend Chris Allen, who is one of the funniest guys working, one time was destroying doing crowd work. He really kind of dug in with his family in the front row and was just crushing. I mean, the place was on fire. But Vince Morris was the headliner, and CJ was middling, and CJ even said from stage, he was like, I don't know how you're going to follow this, Vince. And the only person that laughed was Vince. And Vince has a very funny laugh. It was like, ah! From the back of the room. And Vince went on to mind erase everybody of whatever it was that CJ had just done. It was completely irrelevant after about 8 minutes. Who see, Chris Allen? CJ? I don't know. There was a guy in the middle? Oh, that's right. There was a couple other acts there. It's like previews to a movie. You sometimes don't remember any of the previews. Sometimes all you remember are the previews, right? Because the movie's bad. That can happen. It's a live performance. Not everybody's going to be on. Not everybody's going to be your cup of tea when you go to see that. But that's what I love about a comedy audience is that true veterans of fans of comedy know that's why we have three acts. The first couple times I went to a comedy club, I didn't even realize the acts were doing different amounts of time. But the opening act usually does 5 to 15, depending on their strength. The middle act usually does 20 to 30, and the end, headliner is contractually required to be able to do 45 minutes. And sometimes it's 45, sometimes it's an hour and 45. You know, if you go see Vince Morris, you could see 2 hours of headlining. But when they're doing their job right, it doesn't feel like it. You're like, oh, when they're like, I got to get out of here, and they're like, oh, and it's good for the club sometimes because they can sell more drinks as long as they haven't done last call. You know, you got to let them know you're going to air it out if you're going to do that. I'm out in the weeds here, guys, because I've been just so ecstatic. I got back off the road yesterday. A lot of driving over the last couple of days, but I got back yesterday and picked up some more gigs. I'm working all this week. I'm going out to Toledo tonight, so if you're in the Ohio area, if you're close to Toledo, you can find me tonight at the Toledo Funny Bone with Chris Kattan from Saturday Night Live and some of our other Toledo friends. It'll be a very intimate show. I guarantee that there are still a few tickets left. So if you have time, love to see you tonight. I'll be in Toledo with Chris Kattan. I'll be in Columbus, Ohio, Tuesday night with Chris Kattan at the Columbus Funny Bone. And same situation. I think the most tickets have been sold here in Columbus, so I don't know if that show's going to sell out or not, but we hope so. If you're in Columbus, come see me here. And then on Wednesday night, we'll be at the Liberty Funny Bone in Liberty Township, which is Westchester, Ohio, just north part of Cincinnati, basically. Liberty Funny Bone, brand new building with Chris Kattan and Jay Snyder and Gabe Kia and Jonathan Craig, all some of my very favoritest people in comedy. Come out any of those nights and hang out and you know, get your picture taken with the legend, with Corky Romano, with Mr. Peepers himself. I'm going to be driving Chris from location to location, so this is going to be pretty interesting. I've worked with Rob Schneider before, and he's pretty awesome. So they say Chris is quite the character, so we'll see how that goes. And that's what I've been up to, guys. I'll also be at Liberty Funny Bone on Thursday night. We're doing a Charlie Murphy is coming in, but he canceled a couple shows. So me, John Craig, and Jay, and Dave Glarden will be doing a show on Thursday night. Also, for those that don't know Dave Glarden, Dave Glarden was the first person that ever booked me for a show. The first time I ever wanted to do an open mic, I found out about this open mic that was happening in the Dayton Daily News, which is a newspaper. I looked it up online because some people were talking about it. It was happening in the town where I worked, which was Springfield, Ohio at the time. And the email attached to that was Dave Glarden's. And I emailed him, and he emailed me back within minutes and was like, "You're on the next show." And it was a long time before I got into comedy. I mean, I did like two shows with Dave over the course of a month. And then I didn't do comedy for about a year and 8 months again. Like, I had basically quit. I was like, I guess this isn't for me. Boy, was I wrong. And then Karen Jaffe brought me back into it, who's been a guest on the show and will be again. I was talking to... My mom called me by accident yesterday, and I realized I hadn't shared any of the news with her yet. And my family's always been very supportive of my comedy, but... I've always been my own biggest critic when it comes to comedy. My biggest fear in comedy was getting opportunities before I was ready for them, and then having burnt that bridge where you say, where they say something to you like, "Don't come back for 2 years," or "I don't want to see you, you know, your act needs to develop." And that happens. So my goal is always to be a little bit ahead of the curve, always be a little bit more prepared than I needed to be for every event, because I know they can come on short notice. And I felt like I really dropped the ball the first time I got to audition for Stroop, because I didn't go over my set. I had been performing a lot. I was like, I'm just going to play it by ear like I always do. I'm just going to go up there and have fun. I had a great set. But because I didn't go through the joke Rolodex and show diversity, it was kind of like I talked about myself and I talked about my dick for about 6 minutes each. I mean, my timing was impeccable, but he just doesn't need comics that talk about their dicks. And I don't blame him. I mean, because I still talk about my dick. But I use not the same, not for 6 minutes. Not even in a 30-minute set. So it was an education, but I felt like I should have prepared better. If I'd looked at it on paper, I would have known. This isn't a very, this is, I don't even know if I would have, because there was some subject change in there, but it was not enough to take his mind off of it. He sees too much comedy to be fooled. You know what I mean? So there was no fooling him. He was looking for the substance, and what he liked was when I talked about myself. So, and he told me that. So it's like I knew what I was doing. But I would be lying to you if I didn't say I wasn't suffering from a great deal of depression from that moment forward of not getting that opportunity again. And there was a lot of times when people would say, "Oh, I can get you an audition with him. I'll get you in there. I'll get you in there." And it got to the point where I realized, maybe after the second time, like, never raise your hopes, ever. I already knew this, but it's really hard when somebody says that they can help you in comedy. It's really hard not to get your hopes up a little bit. But if a more successful comedian than you, or somebody that's just been doing it longer than you, and you're a comic, ever says to you, "I can help you," you have to take it with a grain of salt. Because they can help you. But it's a lot of work to help another comic. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not worth doing, because I think if you can teach a skill, that's a part of mastery. And I'm not saying you teach comedy, but the business aspect of it. My biggest downfalls in any job I ever had was not knowing the nuance. When I worked in construction, I got promoted once I figured out the nuance, because I never spoke like somebody that belonged in the field digging a ditch, but that's what my job was. But once I figured out the nuance of construction, show up 45 minutes early every day, ready to do something, dressed like you're not digging a fucking ditch. And guess what? In a very short period of time, you won't be digging a ditch. If you're working for the right company. I was working for the right company. I got promoted in construction. I mean, like, faster than my friend who had been doing it for many, many years. And my friend was like a savant. We called him the Rain Man of construction. He's still in it. He's a brilliant. I got promoted way faster than him, almost up to about the same amount of money he was making at the same company. Only because I figured out the nuance a little bit faster, well, considerably faster than he did. He makes exponentially more money than me now, even if I was still doing construction. He makes almost like six figures. I mean, he's earned it. He's figured out the nuance. And now he wants a new job. Long story short, helping another comic, helping anybody be successful in their career is a lot of work. But comedy truly is a mentorship. It's an apprenticeship and a mentorship. Without mentoring, it's going to take you a lot longer. And sometimes your mentor is only your mentor for a weekend or a day or an hour or 5 minutes. Sometimes that's how long you get with that person. But for me, every time I got some advice, I took it to heart. Some advice you'll get, you know you're not going to take. But there was some advice that I got about not taking away from the act that I got from people that were like, can I give you some advice? And my answer was always, yes, of course you can. I'll take anything. And those are going to be the people that I find are going to be the most successful at anything that they do, is the people looking for criticism. Some people can't stand it. I notice it when I coach soccer, that some of these kids do not take criticism. When I was a kid, criticism was all we got if it wasn't right. It was very little positive motivation until I was probably in high school. That's when that became kind of a thing. But some of these kids would buckle under the pressure of me asking them to give me a better result. And I'm an intense dude. When I coach soccer, you're going to see a completely different version of Adrian, at least a different version than what you see on this podcast or hear on this podcast or see on stage. Coaching soccer for me is a return to primality. What's the word I'm looking for? Primal being, primal senses. I like to think that I'm great with these kids, and I coach in Yellow Springs. And if you know Yellow Springs, you know these parents would not trust me with their children if they didn't think I could, if they didn't like the way I was doing it. Let's put it that way. And I have a great rapport with the referees. I have a great rapport with the other coaches. I never criticize anybody else's players. I never talk to the other team unless I'm saying good save keeper to the other goalkeeper, which you'll hear me say every time he does something nice. I compliment both goalkeepers because I feel like they can't hear it as well from the parents' side of the field as they can from my side. And when I would hear it from another coach, it always made me feel like, wow, that must have been really impressive. Because I know how it feels to be applauded, I'm a fan of applauding. You know what I mean? I'm a proponent, and I'm a stand for it. I applaud graciously, regularly, fortuitously, frivolously maybe even. Anyway, back off the tangent train. Helping anybody succeed at what it is they want to be successful at is going to take a lot of work, and you're going to be up against resistance. And I'd say that's the number one thing that has people not want to do it, is when somebody gives you a piece of advice. If you don't like that piece of advice and you don't take it, then they'd be like, well, why did I even give you advice? Well, advice aren't facts. They're just suggestions. And I realize that because I have a lot of friends who ask me for advice in their personal lives and never take. In fact, they do the opposite of what I tell them to do. And that's okay. You know what I mean? People are going to make up their minds on their own anyway. But there's a few things about not taking away from your act that I learned from other comedians along the way. And it was almost all unsolicited. And really what it was figure out who you are on stage and then dress like that person. Because that's probably the number one best thing you can do for yourself in any industry or any endeavor is dress the part. When I talk to my soccer players, I say, play your position. You don't have to score goals or make great saves or make great tackles to play your position well. Because your position is just like a role in a play. If you have a role in a play as a tree, but you're wandering around the fucking stage, fucking it up for everybody else, you're not doing your job. You're not doing your role right, and you look ridiculous. And if you don't dress the part, you know, if you dress, you're supposed to be a tree, but you wear street clothes instead of the tree outfit that you're supposed to wear. You're making it harder on yourself. Nobody's going to sit back in the audience and be like, that tree stole the show. And if they do, it's because it was in a bad way. So that's like the advice I like to try to start off with anybody in anything that they're doing is if you don't look like you are dressing for the job, you're not going to get the job, period. I realized that in construction. I was about to get promoted from being a carpenter's helper to assistant safety director, which was really primary safety director because they told me we're going to fire the other guy and this will be your job in a month after he's done training you, but we're going to let him train you to be an assistant. I think he even knew that they were going to fire him. He was not doing anything to save his job. And I remember it was about the third meeting we had had. We had already decided that I was going to do the training, but I had come into the office because we were supposed to have a sit-down meeting, and it was like 1 or 2 o'clock. I had a real job in the field. So I came in, I'm wearing like khakis that are a little bit too short because we were working in the mud, and I had work boots on and a white t-shirt that was like dirty because I'd been working all day and it was hot. It was Mississippi. It was the Delta. And they were like, let's do this another time. Maybe we'll do this tomorrow or something. So, I didn't really say anything. It was just, I could read it on their face. They were reevaluating their decision. And I said, okay, well, let's meet before work. That'd be best for me. If we can meet at like 7, we started at 8. I was like, if we can meet here at 7, before everything gets kind of crazy around here, that'd be perfect for me. And I think by saying like, let's come in here before everybody else and sit down, I think that impressed them. And when I came in the next day, I was dressed for the job that they were about to give me, not the job that I currently had. And I landed it. And got a huge pay increase and left that job for another job where I was a safety director and made even more money. And had a company car. And then that company went out of business and I became a professional poker purveyor. But that's a story for another episode, guys. I'm going to have to cut this one off here, I think. I have so much to do. I still have laundry to do. And I have to get to Toledo tonight. And I'm only going to be home today and a little bit tomorrow and then out for the rest of the week. And I was talking to my mom yesterday and I realized that a lot of people leave their careers and say they're going to go do something different. I remember when I left being in the restaurant business to be a comedian, it had to seem like the weirdest, dumbest thing to anybody, but I don't know if anybody really knew that that's what I was doing because I went to college. I went back to college for 2.5 years, and that's where I was hiding out practicing my comedy. I was doing my comedy in class. I was doing my comedy after class. I was doing my comedy in the, you know, just for people. And I was also doing open mics, and I was doing the occasional paid show here and there, but I was really just mostly practicing. And the week I graduated from Wright State University, I was on the road doing comedy, probably not at a professional level at all, but I was getting paid, And I never got to do it, never went to a job after graduating. I went straight into comedy and made it work. And with this last layer that I just added to the agencies that I already work for, it exponentially added to my bottom line and my bookings. I went from being slightly depressed about my calendar to feeling like, oh my God, how am I going to get all of this done? If you want to see a rough cut of the dates, it's on my calendar on my website, adriancosbycomedy.com, or you can get there by going to adriancosby.com. I temporarily misdirected the web name cosbycomedy.com, but you can just Google Adrian Cosby. And the calendar's right on the front page. Tampa, Orlando, Kansas, Syracuse, Albany, Richmond, Virginia Beach, Newport, Toledo, Dayton, just to name a few. I am eternally grateful for all of you that listen every week and keep me on track when I seem to be MIA. Talking to my Fitness Pal people right now. It's been a rough road to on recovery from this back surgery because I can't work out or do any stretching or anything, so I'm trying to eat healthy, but I've been on the road a lot the last couple days not eating very healthy. So I'm just trying not to eat full portions. I was drinking a lot. I think I'm done drinking completely. At least it's got to be a special occasion thing, like bread or cake. My relationship with bread is one that, like, if my body's just going to turn it into cake, then why not eat cake? And since I can't eat cake every day, I'm going to make sure that the cake is good when I eat it, which is also my new cherry pie resolution. Only eat cherry pie when it's the best cherry pie. No more Hostess cherry pies, even though those are my addiction. It's like heroin. It's like, don't do street level heroin. You know what I mean? It's like, you got to do like the designer fucking, the heroin dealer wears a suit, not a robe. You know what I mean? And when I say that, I am not condoning the use of heroin to anybody. It is an awful, terrible, terrible drug. I've never even seen it. And it's closely related to OxyContin and oxycodone prescription pills. Please, nobody ever do any of those. They tried to prescribe that to me after my back surgery, and I was like, no. They're like, you might need something for the pain. I was like, I'll be all right. It was an analogy. It was merely a smack analogy. Oh, so tired, guys. But so eager to see what this next chapter looks like in my life. Thank you for all of your support. T-shirts have not gone out in the mail yet, guys. I just set up my computer, and I wanted to do the podcast on the computer just now, but I realized I set it up in front of an air conditioning vent, so it's got a huge hum right there, so I have to move everything, and I can't do that easily with my back being all swollen still. So I'm going to be kind of like moving around the house, so these might be some rough edits, and I apologize for that. But I thank you for sticking with me and being supportive. And whether you are a fan or you listen because you want to escape your own daily troubles, or you're like, I just need to hear somebody talk about something while I work out, or you're rooting for me or against me, thank you for just having me in your thoughts. I've been feeling lately like if somebody told me that this was all just part of the Matrix, and that everybody can have for themselves what they want if they figure out a way to ask for it just right. I think other people would call that religion, prayer, power of prayer, power of positive thinking. I can't believe I'm where I'm at right now. I honestly have been calling Jay Snyder every day. Like, does this make any sense to you yet? Can you believe it yet? Because it doesn't to me. Really, really is beyond my comprehension currently. So thank you. I hope you have a great week. I wouldn't be surprised if I have one more podcast this week. Of course, I'm going to try to get Chris Kattan. I have no idea what that's going to be like, but I'll definitely be reporting on the shows. And I'm going to be with a lot of friends this week. I'm going to try and get Gabe Kia on the show, and he was also very instrumental in my in the beginning of me doing comedy. He was the first comedian that was ever really, really cool to me that I didn't know. Like, and he was also a gatekeeper because he booked an open mic at a very powerful club at the Go Bananas in Cincinnati. So Gabe is my go-to guy when I do a show. If I produce a show, Gabe is the first person I ask to be the headliner. And he's done it for me a couple times, and I really appreciate it. And I'm going to leave you guys with that. I hope you have a great week, and I hope we get to talk later. And send me a personal message if you want a T-shirt. If you've already sent me a message with your address, I have it. I just have to uncover the layers and layers of conversations that we've had to dig it out. If you want to resend it, that would be great. If you want to send it to my email account, that would be even easier for me to dig out. So I'm going to give you guys my email, which is adrian.cosby@gmail.com. adrian.cosby@gmail. That is, I've never given that out on air before, but that's my comedy email. Anything having to do with comedy, that's my email. If you want a totally unrelated T-shirt, if this is the first you're hearing of it, I'm giving them away for the rest of the month. Just send me your size and your address, and I'll pay for the postage and shipping and the $1 donation that is attached to each shirt that goes to feedingamerica.org, so that each shirt provides 9 meals to hungry families all across the country. Even if the shirt doesn't sell, the shirt still does its job. I love you guys. Thank you so much. Stay unrelated. My way.